This is Our Voice, Politics, Albury-Wodonga, and I'm your host, Ben Habib. We're joined now on the Electorate of Indi Candidates Forum by Liberal Party candidate Sophie Mirabella. Sophie is the incumbent member for Indi and is also Shadow Minister for Innovation, Industry, Science and Research. I spoke with Sophie earlier at her local office in Wangaratta. Sophie Mirabella, welcome to this Indi Candidates Forum podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll start off talking about some local issues. What do you think you've done well as the member for Indi since 2001?
The thing I really value and pride is in my job is reflecting the values and concerns of the people of Indi and fighting for those values and concerns. That could mean getting funding to finally fix the Hume Highway through Albury and Wodonga, or fighting to get more funding, or fighting for the things that people in this area believe are good for Australia. And I think being able to be unafraid, to have the backbone, the stamina and the passion to do that is what I bring to this job, and the results are there for everyone to see.
Great. In your opinion, what are the most pressing problems faced by the communities in the electorate of Indi?
There are several issues that are quite pressing, and by no means are they the only ones, but a key concern at the moment is the cost of living. With the government borrowing $100 million a day, they will have borrowed $3.5 billion by the end of this campaign, and that is pushing up prices, that is pushing up interest rates, and people are very concerned about it. Another key area of concern is, of course, border protection, and whether that's keeping the government having control of border protection about who comes to this country. It's also about what enters this country, quarantine, safety and security of our local jobs. And these are areas of key concern, as well as health and ageing, maintaining health facilities, getting better health facilities to service our needs, like a cancer centre for the border to service the region.
Yeah, which brings me to my next point. It's a well-worn theme that people living in rural communities and regional centres don't get the same access to services as their urban cousins. Why does this continue to be the case? And how do communities in your electorate fit into the Liberal Party's vision for regional Australia?
This is certainly the case under Labor, which has ripped $1 billion out of regional programs since coming to office, and that's because the Labor Party doesn't govern for all of us. They don't have very many rural members, and so they don't do the right thing as a government and govern for all of Australia. They just try to appeal to people they'll get votes from, and that's irresponsible. As a member of the Liberal Party and the Coalition, I know that we deliver for rural and regional Australia because we have a large voice in the Coalition party room. We are a significant bloc, and we ensured when we were in government there were specific programs to get more rural doctors targeted to rural areas, to get special funding for regional partnerships programs to help build community assets, to get more funding for local infrastructure, to help country students go to the city and try and pursue an education, because we live in these communities and we want to do the best for the areas that we live in. So the Coalition does deliver for rural areas, and governments of all persuasions need to ask the question, do we want people to live out of non-metropolitan centres? If the answer is yes, then there's an obligation to maintain both built and social infrastructure. And that means having decent roads, decent health, decent schools and decent facilities. And that obligation the Labor Party has really let slip, whether it's through their new broadband policy, whether it's through cutting funding to regional areas. They are very transparent in not really caring about rural areas where they don't think they need those votes.
You mentioned young people just then. What do you think are the main issues facing young people in the electorate, and what message have you got for them?
The main issues facing facing young people are security about the future, security about whether they can get a job and keep it, about, cost of living. It's really difficult to make ends meet, particularly if you're trying, if you've just started out in the workforce or if you're trying to balance work and study. These are key issues of concern. They care about the future and the environment in which they live in.
Yep, excellent. Okay, let's move on to talk about Australian politics as a rule at the moment. One of the things that irritates people a bit is that the political debate in this country has been reduced to a discourse of short sound bites, image branding and PR slogans. For example, the ALP has got its repetitive moving forward slogan that it's going with at the moment. And the Coalition has its great big new tax slogan, which some people think is a bit childish. In your opinion, why is this kind of discourse necessary?
Well, with the advent of more and more news services in the 24-hour news cycle, we've ended up with news wanting a 5-second grab or a 10-second grab, so that certainly hasn't helped. But it is a cynical attempt to try and reduce a message to its most, to its simplest consumable form. And I think that the manner in which the spin doctrine has occurred under Kevin Rudd has led to his unravelling. The fact that every message, every word was tested with a focus group before it was uttered through the mouths of Kevin Rudd and his leadership team, which included Julia Gillard, goes to show that there's only so much people will put up with this sort of talk before they get sick of it. People got sick of working families, the mantra that Labor used at the last election, and already Julia Gillard is being ridiculed with her looking forward slogan. And I think the onus is on journalists to ask questions that go beyond the slogans, to say, okay, Julia, you're using the slogan looking forward. Why are you ashamed to look back? You're asking people to trust you going forward, but you've got a track record. Did you agree with Kevin Rudd and the ETS? Did you agree with Kevin Rudd with the big population for Australia? Because you stood behind him and nodded your head. If you disagreed with him, what did you say at the time? And to really get under the skin of politicians and go beyond the slogans, because if the questions aren't asked, then there's no hope of having them answered.
So where does the responsibility lie then? For raising the level of debate.
Raising the level of debate really rests with all of us. Yeah. People can't, if people don't accept that level of debate, then politicians will respond. Mm. If the journalists don't respond to that level of debate, then politicians will respond. And you only get the politicians you vote for, as they say. So it really is up to all of us. And it's, I know it's difficult for journalists because they are part of the political process, and when you're exposed to something for long enough, you may think it's normal, but it's not. But they do have a particular responsibility.
Well, there you go, voters. There's a call to arms, if ever I've heard one. There's been a trend in other Western democracies of a shift away from the major parties towards alternative political forces. For example, in Britain, the Liberal Democrats, and in the United States, the Tea Party movement, in part which spring from a dissatisfaction of the superficial politics that I've just described. Do you think a similar trend is possible in Australia with the major parties leaking votes to alternative political forces?
Of course, anything is possible, and that's how small parties develop, and it's already happened in Australia. Whether it was the Democrats that developed as a force, whether it was the 1 million votes to One Nation that reflected a dissatisfaction with the political debate at the time and both major political parties, I think it's a healthy reflection that people still care enough to voice their opinion through an alternative organisation that they feel reflects its views. And that is how you get a more a greater and more relevant response from the major political parties when something like that happens and they can see the shift of people away. And yes, it will happen again if major political parties ignore what issues that people are really concerned about.
Yeah, great. Okay, let's move on to another important national issue now, in climate change. We've seen over the past 12 months that the Coalition and even the Liberal Party itself is split over the climate change issue. Tony Abbott has stated that human-induced climate change is a bit of a myth. What's your personal position on this question?
Well, I believe there is climate change, and I believe human behaviour does affect climate change. And it's not just the Coalition that has a variety of views, but also the Labor Party. The difference is that we haven't heard too much about those differing views. I think that's what the question was.
Okay, now I've had a good look at the Coalition's Direct Action Plan for Climate Change, and it does feature some encouraging proposals for land care and water management. What isn't in the plan is a mechanism for pricing carbon. Now, it's surprising to me that the Liberals have gone for a series of ad hoc government incentives for carbon reduction as opposed to a market-based strategy. What's the reasoning here?
Well, it's a series of programs and it's a plan to actually reduce emissions. That's what people want. They don't want the same level of emissions just shifted around from here and there. They actually want a reduction in carbon. And under Labor's plan that they've now dumped, and in the absence of any other plan, we have to go with what they had. Under Labor's plan, we would have exported emissions elsewhere and exported manufacturing, exported jobs, and in fact led to an increase in emissions to nations that would take over some of our industry but not import our environmental laws. So they would have made the same things but with worse environmental results. So I think it is important, and even President Obama is going down this path, of taking real action to reduce our emissions. And we've got that plan. The Labor Party doesn't have a plan. And it is a disappointment because Julia Gillard took over. She said she would fix certain policy problems that Labor had, and she hasn't announced them yet.
Are you advocating to attract renewable energy projects to the northeast?
Absolutely. You get a greater response from people living in the country to local initiatives like that. They're always interested about how they can improve their town, their region, their valley, their hamlet. And country people have a more hands-on approach to the environment. There's a greater participation as volunteers in various organisations, including Landcare. So it's an ideal location to pilot new technology. And we can't predict what renewable energy initiatives will develop over the coming years, but we are a great location, particularly for solar technology, being, I believe, the sunniest part of Australia here in north and northeastern Victoria.
Excellent. Now, I'll ask you a question that I asked you privately on another occasion, and I was encouraged by the response that you gave. So I'll ask it again for our listeners. To grow the economy necessarily entails increasing resource consumption and greenhouse gas pollution. Do you think, given that we live on a finite planet, that perpetual economic growth is possible?
Human ingenuity is an amazing thing. And we can't predict how we will be able to use resources more efficiently and more effectively into the future. But I'm an optimist. I believe we will be able to. I think we will be able to produce what we produce and more efficiently and with fewer resources. At the same time, I also think we can do better in the way we organise our economy and in the way our economic systems are structured, because we do have finite resources, and although we will develop technology to get more use or more utility from our existing resources. They are necessarily finite, and we do need to think about a better organisation and arrangement for the standard of living that we do want and for economic development.
Great, and I think that's a topic a lot of people would like to hear more from the coalition and all sides of politics. So we'll move on to the economy now. The drought and the global financial crisis have hit the Northeast pretty hard over the past few years. What's your vision for renewing the economic vitality of Indi?
The first step is we've got to build on our strengths. And we do have a terrific reputation for clean, green agricultural production. We've got to promote that and protect that so that we retain and grow existing industries. For example, the apple industry. We have a clean, green industry, and we're diversifying now into all sorts of other products like ciders and the rest of it. So when we're threatened with Chinese imports that could potentially bring in exotic diseases on the mainland, that's something we have to fight. When we look at other industries, for example, in manufacturing, like the textile industry, we have a very successful large employer here in the northeast in Wangaratta that has invested in new technology and developed new products. When their contracts are threatened by substandard Chinese copycats, we need to stand up for our local industries, our local intellectual property and local jobs, and help them grow and develop. So they're just two examples, but there are myriad other examples where we can build on existing strengths. And I think that is a very important key, because once you lose the infrastructure for a particular industry, it's very difficult and very expensive to start it up again. And there are strategic reasons for governments to make decisions to help successful industries remain in existence in Australia. For example, food security. Mm-hmm. People want to be able to buy Australian food. I don't want to buy Chinese fish. I don't want to buy Chinese apples. Now, if we allow the importation of food from other country that does not live up to the same safety standards as our own, well, we're really letting down our population. We're really letting them down, because they want to know. They want to compare like with like, and I think there's a really important role there for government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you talked about the high levels of government debt that exist here at the moment. What's your opinion on the high levels of individual personal debt that people seem to be racking up at the moment?
It is a great concern, because as with anything you borrow, you're expected to give it back. And I'm concerned for a lot of people who have grown up during a period of sustained economic growth, with real wages growing over 20% up under the previous coalition government, that there's this sense that the bad times will never come. Well, it's inevitable at some stage. And we all have to live within our means. And I'm really concerned about the sort of personal crisis and community crisis we will have when the crunch time comes for those who are living way beyond their means, because inevitably governments are asked to deal with the social consequences of these impacts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll finish up now speaking about the asylum seeker issue. Now, given that the Northeast is not particularly ethnically diverse in comparison with the capital cities, why are the people of Indi concerned about boat people and border security? What have you heard?
Local people are concerned because they feel that a democratically elected government should have the ability to control who and what comes into Australia, whether it's people, whether it's illegal substances, criminal gangs, or food products. They want to know that they can rely on their government. People have certain expectations of government, and that is a key expectation. And when the government fails to be able to control its borders, it really loses. People get a sense that the government is losing control of one of their basic, very basic responsibilities. So that's one of the key reasons. And there is a sense of fairness as well. They say, well, why should we allow people to voluntarily destroy their identity papers and come in Australia through the back way when there are others who are trying to get in through the right channels?
Okay, you did raise some important issues there that do need to be debated in public. How do we have that debate in a way that doesn't dredge up some of the nastier prejudices that exist in the community?
I think we have that debate by not having censorship. And sometimes people may say things that you may not like or you may find distasteful. That's a democracy. I'm not one for censorship. And I think you can do more harm by imposing censorship on a debate than by allowing people to speak freely. When you bottle up or when you create pressure for people to keep silent about things that concern them, then you run the risk of people feeling really, really frustrated, disengaged from the political process. So I think there is greater wisdom in the opinions of more people than there is in a handful of people. So the more people discuss and debate these issues openly, the more they tease out the finer details, the better result we get to in the end.
Excellent. And to wrap up, what message would you like to leave with the voters of Indaya?
The message I would like to leave is that we do have a positive future. There's a lot we can achieve in this country. We are abundant with natural resources, but that we are at the crossroads. I'm very concerned about the impact that the current level of debt will have on our ability to invest in important built and social infrastructure for the future. Because just as with personal debt, government debt has to get paid back. And we need to make decisions now. The only way I believe we can go forward is to change the government, to change the waste, to change the spending and get Australia back on track.
Sophie Mirabella, thanks for speaking to us today on the Candidates Forum podcast.
My pleasure.